It's Budweiser's From the Sidelines, brought to you by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads, as we welcome in Fox 8's John Telich for the final time in this Browns season, as their season has come to a close following their regular season finale win over the Cincinnati Bengals. JT, how you doing?
Doing great, Rocco, and it's one of the big regrets, I think, because there was so much promise coming in, and this year, it's almost like in the AFC, although they found their way lately in the Kansas City Chiefs, but it almost seemed like in the past years it was like, why even try, you know? Because if you got in the playoffs, well, you're not going to get to the Super Bowl because you've got to get past Patrick Mahomes. This was kind of like a, not necessarily tailor-made year, but a year where they could have made some noise had they gotten into the tournament, as it were. But alas, it did not work out for them.
Well, and especially after the opener against Kansas City this year, that's a game the Browns lost, but certainly won afterwards, you're thinking, okay, this team can compete with Kansas City. They're not, you know, light years behind the Chiefs or anything like that. This is a team that can certainly compete. And then things just kind of fell apart. So I know this has been talked about ad nauseum, and I kind of want to get into Baker and some stuff like that. But before we get to that, is it fair to, like, point the finger at one or two people in particular with this year's shortcomings, or was it just kind of a collective disappointing season?
Well, I think it's two things. Is kind of how they handled the Baker injury thing, and then they were affected by COVID, I would say, more than just about all but one or two teams in the National Football League. And I'm not the head of the CDC. I'm not going to go that far. It just seemed to be the case. So that was something that they had to deal with. They made some pretty good acquisitions on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm not sure that all of them drew the great fruit that you'd like. Like John Johnson III was used to playing closer to the line of scrimmage most of the time in Los Angeles with his team, and then didn't play as much, played more in the back, and I think he kind of had a struggle of a year on the defensive side of the football. So a lot of small things that kind of added up to this year being the way it was. And almost, Rocco, I can go back to my first year at Channel 8, 1980, Cardiac Kids, everything went great. All those tight wins, all those tight games became victories. And then the next year, total opposite, they were 5-11. And then they were wandering the desert for 3 or 4 years before Marty and Bernie came around. But this time, you had a stumble from the nice record that they had last year to the record that they have this year. But I think there's just way too many good pieces, much better direction overall from the team to give you more optimism, as opposed to just saying, oh my gosh, here we go again. This isn't anything close to that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, JT. And one name in particular that is very much being focused on right now is Baker Mayfield. You talked about it already, kind of, you know, him playing through the injuries this season. Maybe not the best idea, but hindsight is always 20/20. So, I mean, you saw the report from Ian Rappaport comes out about the Browns being committed to Baker moving forward. And then you had local reports earlier talking about, you know, a potential rift between him and Kevin Stefanski. So, you know, JT, can this thing work between those two sides moving forward?
Well, I think it has to, and I think there were some things going on just by virtue of not anything that Baker kind of alluded to on the local level, but what he said in network interviews that he did with, like, ESPN or what have you towards the end of the season about trying to repair some things, you know, within the building and that type of thing. So rather than get into the Baker wars, as Twitter seems to do on a daily basis, you know, one side is, the Death Star, and then the other side is the good forces of good and evil in the universe. And somewhere in there is, you know, Harrison Ford trying to, you know, do Harrison Ford things. So it's been really wild. And what Barry said in the presser on Tuesday was in essence, you know, he's their guy. They're gonna ride him. They want him to be perfectly healthy. They certainly can be culpable in not giving him all the tools to be successful this past year. But some of it was on him. Some of it was on his injury. And maybe you could say some of it was just on not the great conducive culture that you want to be a winning organization. I think there were a couple of guys that alluded to the, you know, like the defense did the defense and the offense did the offense and ne'er the twain would meet, you know. And so that's bad. You know, you have to have them feeling that they're playing for the same team and they're not taking sides like, well, we're doing our job. What's wrong with you guys? And I will say in some cases, you know, it's a logical question to ask an athlete of one group. You guys are not holding up your share of the bargain. Do you think, you know, there could be any division between your group and the other group that's playing so well? I mean, those are kind of naturally dissension type of directive questions, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are. You know, nobody is. It's not like they've all taken sides and, you know, this is the Crips, you know, the Bloods and the Crips. This isn't that. This is just, you know, two sides of a football team that recognize that they have to be successful as a full unit, and they'll be taking the steps as best that they can to come together. And maybe in their defense, Rocco, some of that COVID stuff had something to do with it. You're taking that person-to-person contact out if you're trying to be, you know, as safe as possible and not allow individuals to interact as much as they used to. That's a weird dynamic to have mm-hmm. to deal with because you're a team and it's difficult for you to kind of act like a team is supposed to act because you're dealing with all these every week. You're afraid of the what's going to happen with the result of these tests.
John Telich joins me on Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco over on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. Speaking of the defense, JT, it felt like Joe Woods was on the hot seat week after week, at least yeah. in the early portions of the season. Then towards the later stages, it kind of became, hey, the defense is sort of carrying us right now. We need the offense to step up. So is there a reason for fans to feel optimistic about that side of the football heading into next season?
I think there's a lot of reasons for that. The big thing that they need to do, and what a pleasant surprise he was Jadeveon Clowney, yes. is to try to lock him up for a couple of years because this was a one-and-done type of a contract year for him. I thought he was great. He had a phenomenal attitude. What a compliment he is and to what Miles does on the other side. So if you can be assured that you can bring him back, maybe another impact linebacker for them, because they've gone through some younger linebackers like the Mac Wilsons of the world over the past several years, and that hasn't seemed to be as dynamic a fit. They loved what they did getting JLK, loved his promise and the excitement he brings to the position, and I love what they did, the draft pick 20th overall, and getting Greg Newsom. What a great rookie season this young man has. So there's a lot of optimism, I think, Rocco, on that defensive side of the ball. I really and truly believe that that defensive backfield, they've got plenty of guys that can play versatile positions. I mean, MJ Stewart, I believe, was drafted 4 years ago, 2018. He was a second-round pick, but he's one of those guys they kind of, you know, grabbed, and then he's developed into being a pretty good player. And,
yeah.
and so you have someone like that to focus on and have at your disposal next year. Maybe, you know, Ronnie Harrison didn't work out as well as they would have liked. I'm not sure what direction they go with him, but there's a lot of optimism, Rocco, on how they can start the year off on and not get into shootouts like they did in two of the first three or four weeks of the season, where they're playing Kansas City, giving up a lot. They played the Chargers, gave up a lot, and get to be more of the defense that we saw for the most part over the last half of the season.
That's funny you mentioned MJ Stewart in particular. I have a buddy who just absolutely has fawned over MJ Stewart since he's come to the Browns. And you're right. I mean, he was a second-round pick. What was it? Tampa, I think, took him in the second round, and things just didn't pan out there. But he's kind of had a nice little career revival here in Cleveland, which has been nice to see. But you're absolutely right, JT. There's a lot of positives on that side of the football right now. And I think that side, again, of the football made a lot of strides in the right direction as the season went on. You know, speaking of free agents like Jadeveon Clowney, are there a couple of guys yeah. that Andrew Berry needs to prioritize this offseason? I know Rashard Higgins is in that group. David Njoku is in that group. A couple of other names as well. Who are some of the guys you would focus on?
Well, I think, you know, I'm curious to see what direction Kevin goes next year offensively, if they're going to be as heavy with the three tight ends that they seem to be this year, because obviously Austin Hooper had a down year and he was a big disappointment. David Njoku, he's a stock you buy. And so I think they have to do something in terms of making that work. They need to use, 13th pick, I believe. They need to use an early pick, or at least first or second round pick, on some of the emerging wide receivers that are going to be available in the NFL draft. I really think they need a stud receiver. Do they want to bring Jarvis back? You know, Jarvis would have to probably have his contract reworked in order to, you know, to make it more palatable. Mm-hmm. By virtue of what he means to the culture, I would look in that direction. Now, there are some people grumbling and saying that the relationship with Baker could be better. I'm not going to walk down that road. I'm just going to say that Jarvis Landry looked pretty good in that last game. Jarvis Landry, if he can be close to what that is or even better, then it's certainly worth bringing a pro like him back to your football team. They really need to upgrade what they have behind the first stringers on the offensive line. They got a great year from Joel Bitonio. I think Joel Bitonio is like a pro, not just a Pro Bowl talent. He's an all-pro talent. And for him to play a couple of games at left tackle just shows you the kind of guy he is, the kind of leader, the kind of teammate he is. And obviously Wyatt Teller had a very good year. They may do something there at center. I don't know. But there's a lot of things that probably will change it more so on the offensive side of the ball to try to boost the backups on the offensive line and to get that wide receiver room to be more of a dynamic wide receiver room. You had the promise starting this year with DPJ, but I don't know if he really lit up the league the way they wanted to. And, you know, we hardly ever talk about it, but I saw pretty good coverage from them this year on the special teams. But, boy, could we see someone bust a kick return for a score once in a while, or a punt return for a big gain. It just doesn't seem to be part of their repertoire. And I think, obviously, there could come a game next year where they're going to need a play like that. And you would hope that the special teams could kind of come away and give them that type of a result.
I was hoping my guy JoJo Natson from the University of Akron could be the one to finally do that for him. But alas, my Zips fandom will have to be put off for another day. So, oh well. John Telich is our guest here on Budweiser's From the Sidelines, again brought to you by North Ridgeville Convenience, Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. Well, if you didn't know, JT is calling it a day after this Brown season. What are you, like a month away from officially signing off, JT?
Yeah, we set a date for early February months ago, just so that we would take into account the Browns having a nice little run in the playoffs, and obviously that did not happen. So we're going with February 7th. My last show will
All
be
right.
6 o'clock. Yeah, 6 o'clock show on February the 7th, and then looking forward to what the next adventure happens to be. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to that final show and looking forward to keeping up with your journeys there after you call it a day. So JT, let me ask you, in all your years covering the Cleveland Browns and what I'm sure has been a very, very adventurous time for you, I just want to ask you, do you have a favorite moment or two from your years covering the team? Was there a locker room moment or an interaction or something like that you had that really sticks out to you in your years covering the Brown and Orange?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a little different nowadays, Rocco. The exposure to the athletes is changed. It's a little bit more spoon-fed from the team versus a more off the cuff the way it was back in the 80s and, let's say, 90s. In the 80s, I can recall many days where my bosses would say, so, you know, what's the angle out there at practice today? And I would always say, I have no idea. Let me get out there and talk to the guys. And you could do that. You can go in the locker room. You could chat up with Mike Pruitt. You could chat up with Bernie Kosar. All these guys just kind of off the cuff, whether it was a Brian Brennan or a Felix Wright or a Kevin Mack, Ernest Biner, all of these guys from these real good teams. And so it was more of a community feeling. I didn't feel at times like I was the enemy of the team. There's a little bit more of an adversarial feeling relationship in this day and age. And I even recall back in the 80s, I used to do these like once a week skits that were just kind of off the cuff and really bizarre. Like I did a takeoff on the theme song Green Acres with the football field being the Green Acres. And I had Felix Wright and Hanford Dixon sang the lines in the theme song of Green Acres. And just, you know, we had a lot of fun because that was the feeling that we had as we were doing our job. So there was one instance in the 80s when they made this film that was kind of like a takeoff on Conan the Barbarian. And Mike Babb, the center, was the star of it. He was the Babarian, B-A-A-B-A-R-I-A-N. And you had all the guys at Squires Castle in Willoughby Hills over two or three days. You know, they had makeup, and they had Tiny Tim was involved in this thing. And it was right coming off the heels of the Chicago Bears in 85 who did their Super Bowl shuffle.
Right.
And the Browns put their own version of this thing. And it was far more intricate and acting, and guys had lines and directors and, you know, cameras up on you know, up on cranes, and it was spectacular. So that was kind of the feeling you had with these guys in the 1980s, just a lot of fun to be around. And they also supplied, I think, probably the most exciting moment in that stadium. And that would have been 1987, January 3rd, I think was the date. It was the week that they had gotten into the playoffs. Marty was the head coach, and they were down by, you know, they were down and looked lost and out of it, just the same way the Denver Broncos looked to be out of it the game of the drive. And they came back and tied the game with the New York Jets in the first round of the playoffs. And then that game went into double overtime. The Browns prevailed on a field goal. And I don't think I've ever heard the stadium as loud. I mean, if the place was shaking, it was one of the more amazing feelings I've ever had covering anything. And, you know, that would be the top memory for the Browns. And then and just to give you an idea how things can shift and how, you know, the tide can turn, as it were, to be Mr. Cliche, the next week was just the direct opposite, where the place was as loud when Brian Brennan scored a touchdown late against the Broncos, and then they tackled the kickoff returner on the 2-yard line, and you just had that feeling that they were going to go to the Super Bowl. But within the span of 2 weeks, you had one of the greatest moments in Cleveland Browns history, and then one of the most epic, heart-wrenching, take your guts out and throw them on the sidewalk kind of a feeling. And that's what it was when Elway and the guys came back with the drive and then sent the Browns out of the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding. Great. Yeah, and I mean, it's no secret, I was not around yet at the time of that happened, but I've seen the replays, and I hear tale upon tale upon tale of different recollections of that. And I mean, gosh, yeah, gut-wrenching, I think, is a fairly appropriate word. But, I mean, hey, a week earlier, the stadium was rocking on a double OT game-winning field goal. And, I mean, hey, that's pretty cool that you were able to experience that, as well as some theater-esque performances from some of those 80s Cleveland Browns members. So, great memories for you there, JT. Awesome to hear. Well, hey, JT, it's been an honor doing this segment here with you these past 2 years since I came to WEOL. Obviously, I've followed your work well beyond just coming here to WEOL and being able to talk to you. So, big fan of you over the years, JT. Again, it's been an absolute honor talking it and doing this here with you. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to keep up with each other down the line.
I look forward to that, Rocco, and I have had a great time working with you. And first and foremost, love to be on talking about, you know, the Cleveland Browns. It's just such an amazing and integral part of Northeast Ohio. We have some of the greatest fans in the world in pro football, and many of them are listeners to your radio station. They know their football, and it's been an honor to be on here and talk with y'all about the Cleveland Browns.
He's the man, John Tellett. JT, it's been an honor. Thank you very much. You have a good one, good sir.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.